Welcome into this edition of ESPN FC on ESPN Plus. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Great to be with you. Massive day in the Premier League. The boys will be in to break it all down as the top four race takes another turn. Plus, Stefano Fusaro will join us from down in Orlando. We have our first postponement of the MLS Is Back tournament just 4 days away from the tourney kicking off. But we start in Germany with the German Cup final. Bayern Munich beating Bayer Leverkusen by a final score of 4-2. Munich, for the fifth time in the last 8 years, champions of the German double. Alaba, Gnabry, Robert Lewandowski scoring for Bayern Munich. We're joined now by Stuart Robson. Robbo, as we just saw, Bayern Munich, as they usually are in Germany, pretty comfortable today, no?
Yeah, it was comfortable in the first half. They played well in the first half. They got their goal fairly early on. Alaba's free kick, a great free kick, but it was somewhat out of the blue. I just don't think that Bayer Leverkusen really gave them a problem in the first half. They didn't close down well enough. It was too easy for Bayern to keep possession. They could play out from the back at will. But that, I thought, all changed in the second half. And suddenly, with Bayern Munich holding this high defensive line, which they try and do, suddenly Bayer Leverkusen realised how to play against it by hitting big diagonals in behind them, by playing balls round the corner, getting front players to time their runs. They looked a much bigger threat and they pressed high around the field. And when it was 3-1, had Bayer Leverkusen scored the next one, I think Bayern Munich might have been under a bit of pressure. I think it was a very good display by Bayern Munich in the second half.
We had Jan Agafjortov on the show the other day. He was explaining Leverkusen's Neverkusen nickname. You hate to rely on an old stereotype, but the second, the third goals especially seemed like classic self-destruction.
Well, obviously, the third goal was poor goalkeeping. It was just one long kick from Manuel Neuer. They're trying to squeeze up. They're not on the half turn. Lewandowski, great first touch. But as the goalkeeper's backing off, Radetzky, he makes a real mess of it. So poor goalkeeping from him. And from that moment on, you thought that Bayern Munich were going to just take advantage and pick them off at will. But that wasn't the case. And it wasn't until that fourth goal went in that you realised that Bayern Munich were going to win the cup. I thought it was an indifferent display by Bayern Munich. And it shows that if you can play balls in behind them, you can close them down and stop them playing in midfield. They missed Thiago. Thiago came on late on the game, but I don't think Goretzka's anywhere near the level of Thiago. When Bayer Leverkusen started to press in that area, it was a chance, and they get on getting balls in behind. And just for maybe 15, 20 minutes, it looked as though Bayer Leverkusen could get themselves back into the game.
Right, you look at the Champions League odds, as we've seen throughout this week on the show. Bayern Munich are listed among the favorites, but they're going to have a month off. What kind of impact do you think that'll have on their rhythm?
It might be difficult for them because they're the informed team at the moment. You know, they came back earlier than everybody else. They've had a great time since starting football again. They've won most of their games. They've looked exceptional in most of the games. They look comfortable in most of the games. But having that break, it might just take the edge off their ability to pick it up again. And I think teams will watch what Bayern Munich have done over the last few weeks and see this high line and think, there's ways we can break them down. If we get the timing of the runs right from the front, let's get midfield runners going as well, get big diagonals played in behind their fullbacks, we can cause Bayern Munich problems. And I think that might be their undoing. I certainly have them down as the favourites on their current form, but if teams look at the way they play and come up with a game plan and a strategy to break down that high offside line, they could be vulnerable.
As we showed you at the top of the segment, Robbo, Bayern Munich have been dominating Germany. They're about to add Leroy Sané. They've been linked to Kai Havertz. Do you think we will soon see them as dominating Europe?
There's every chance they could do, but I still think they need a centre-half. We saw Boateng have to go off in this game. Alaba's done a great job in there. Hernandez came on and played on the left-hand side. Pavard, who's playing at right-back, can also play at centre-half. So Sula, who was back into the squad today, he's another player that they've got. But I still think they need strengthening in that area. That could be an area where they may just struggle to beat the very best teams in Europe. And without Thiago, because there's every talk about Thiago going off somewhere else, I think they might struggle in midfield. As I said, Goretzka's not the same sort of level as Thiago. Sané will play higher up the field. And I'm not sure that Kai Havertz is going to go to Bayern Munich. All the talk is about him going to Chelsea.
What do you make of what's happened to Thiago at Bayern Munich? Just a couple months ago, he was the engine of their midfield. Now he's expendable?
Well, he's had an injury. That was the major problem for him. Then he suggested to the Bayern board that he might want to take on a different role somewhere else, go to another club. I think that would be a major blow for Bayern Munich. I think he's been outstanding for them. Him and Kimmich in midfield have been the rock where they can build everything from. They've got a great passing range. Kimmich is the player that gets around the field. Thiago with his passing range and his technical ability, that's been excellent for them. Without him today, I didn't think they controlled midfield. Goretzka couldn't give that same sort of domination that Thiago does. So that would be a major loss if Thiago goes.
One of the places he's linked, Liverpool. You think it'd be a good fit?
I think wherever Thiago goes, he'll be a good fit because he's an outstanding player. He's a midfield player that can do both sides of the game. Yeah, he's not, you wouldn't say he's a brilliant defender, but he'll get in the way of things. He'll get good positional play. He'll block balls into the front players. He'll go and get his tackles in when he needs to. But his ability on the ball is second to none in midfield. He can switch play. He can hit penetrative passes over the top. He scores the odd goal from distance. He's an outstanding midfield player. And I think he would suit whichever club he went to. Liverpool would be great for him.
Maybe I should ask the question the other way around. Do Liverpool need Thiago?
I don't think they need him, as they've proved over the last couple of seasons. They're an excellent side with what they've got. But I think if you want to build, as Liverpool did when they were winning everything in the 80s, they built every year. They bought two or three new players. They're going to have to buy two or three new players if they want to stay at the very top. They have to freshen things up. And a great way of freshening things up would be to buy Thiago. I mean, he's an outstanding player, would suit their midfield.
Thanks, Robbo. Well, look, wherever Thiago ends up, make sure to bookmark the Transfer Talk portion of our website. It'll keep you up to date all throughout the summer. And then next fall, you can follow Bayern Munich right here on ESPN+, your exclusive home for the Bundesliga in English in the United States. Manchester United smashed Bournemouth 5-2 Saturday. Rashford, Martial, Bruno Fernandes all on the score sheet. But the real story, Mason Greenwood, the 18-year-old, scores twice as United stretch their unbeaten run across all competitions to 16 games. We're joined now by Don Hutchison, Shaka Hislop. Don, the final scoreline, very impressive. Just how good were Manchester United today?
Offensively, well, they're absolutely amazing. I thought Bruno Fernandes in midfield alongside Pogba were sensational. Their playing was so much freedom. But the three guys at the top end of the pitch, I thought Rashford played with a smile on his face. He had loads of energy. His quality was there. Martial scored probably his best ever goal in a Man United shirt, but the big story was Mason Greenwood. I mean, this kid looks like an absolute superstar. Every now and again, you come across a player and you think this kid is ready, and he's not only ready for Man United. If I was Gareth Southgate, I'd be fast-tracking this kid into the squads, the future England squads, and getting this kid ready for the Euros.
Shaka, before we speak any more about Mason Greenwood, just big picture on Manchester United. Earlier this season even, they would lose to teams that they weren't. And when they go behind against Bournemouth, I could see why United fans might say, okay, here we go again. But this looks different. Do you think we can now buy in that this turnaround is for real?
Yes, I do. This feels different. And you're absolutely right, Sebi. When Manchester United go behind to Bournemouth, you wonder, is this the same old Manchester United? And at no point did you think so. And let's be honest, up until the Bournemouth goal, United hadn't played well. They struggled getting out their blocks for some reason. And then Bournemouth get this incredible goal. And you just wonder. And at no point did you feel that this was United of old, that they didn't have this under full control. And as sluggish as started as it was, nobody seemed to panic. And you see how the game turned around. That speaks to the new United, which for me is more impressive than the scoreline would suggest.
Don, speaking of turnarounds, Anthony Martial, I mean, just a worldie of a goal. The knock with Martial is always, though, his consistency. I think he's got 4 goals, though, since the restart. Mm-hmm. Are you convinced that he can be the guy to lead the line, or at least partially lead the line for United?
It's a good question, because I think probably United fans are asking the same thing, because the Anthony Martial that I've seen this season, I don't think you could trust him. I go back to the games against Sheffield United when United drew 3-3 but only really played for 7 minutes. There was other games, the Bournemouth game in the driving rain and the sleet, and he didn't really fancy it. And there were so many occasions at the start of the season where I think for me, when I criticise Anthony Martial, I only criticise him for one reason, because he's got the talent and I need to see it more often, because his ability's there. He's got all the tools to be a fantastic player. But sometimes in his demeanour, he seems a little bit quiet. He doesn't seem as though he wants to push himself. I think it's all to do with Bruno Fernandes coming through the door. I think he's raised the bar inside the dressing room on a weekday and certainly on a match day. And I think Paul Pogba's risen to the challenge. I think Marcus Rashford knows he's going to get service. And I think Martial is in the same boat. They're looking behind him and they're thinking, wow, we've got Paul Pogba playing as an 8 and we've got Bruno Fernandes playing as an 8/10. the chances are going to come. So Martial just has to keep making the runs.
Right, Chaka, let's dive in on Mason Greenwood, 18 years old, 2 goals. We've seen flashes in the past, but this really felt like a coming out party. You think he's good enough to start consistently for this Manchester United team?
I do. There's no question, and I'm building on what Don said about Greenwood earlier. There's simply no question that Mason Greenwood is one of the most talented players come out of the academy for some time and deserves his starting position. The only uncertainty around Greenwood is that he's 18 years old. And we've seen this time and time again. We've spoken about it. As a teenager, you are inevitably going to have these ups and these downs. Right now, his ups show how good a player he is. We'll have to endure those downs. But that's just a part of being a teenager and rising to the consistent levels that are needed in the Premier League. That's not meant as a knock on Greenwood in any fashion. That's just meant as a, let's just pump our brakes a little bit and remember how teenagers, all teenagers, develop in this game.
Don, earlier in this segment, you were salivating over Greenwood, yet Manchester United reportedly coming to terms, personal terms, with Jadon Sancho. Do they need him, or is the front three we saw today good enough?
Well, it all depends on the perception you get from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. If he fancies Anthony Martial, then I would suggest they don't need him, Jadon Sancho, because they've got Marcus Rashford on the left-hand side, and they'll have Mason Greenwood on the right-hand side. Personally, I think when he develops, and Shaka's right, and he gets a little bit more experience, I think he'll end up playing as a nine, Mason Greenwood. So therefore, that frees up a little bit of space on that right-hand side. If you said to him in that performance today on how Greenwood's been playing since he's been on the side, even though Jadon Sancho is a terrific player, the back five worried me for Man United today. Every time Bournemouth went forward and they started the game well, and I was saying it in my commentary, this game at 5-2, it felt like it could finish 6-3. It felt as though the better sides, and even Bournemouth, you know, played well today and created lots of chances and were taking shots from distance and scored good goals and maybe could have had one or two more. The back line worries me. So if I was Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and I had 70 million, 100 million pounds burning a hole in my back pocket, for now, I would park Jadon Sancho and I would go and buy a centre-half.
Shaka, if I wanted evidence to support Don's theory, I would point to the Harry Maguire nutmeg from today. Should United spend their money at the back instead?
Listen, if they are spending money at the back, Harry Maguire isn't the player I think that's going to find himself out of this picture. It happens. Listen, it was a fantastic goal. You take the embarrassment for what it is, but you somehow leave it with 3 points. That, for me, is a bigger takeaway for Maguire. That's just part and parcel of playing this game at this level. But Don's right. I think they have issues. I think right back, Wan-Bissaka is sorted. As I said, I'm happy with Maguire. I'm looking at the other centre-back. I'm still not sure about Manchester United's left-back options going forward. I still don't think Nemanja Matic is any kind of a long-term solution for United as a holding midfielder, as good as they are right now. So there are other positions in the park that are more urgent and in need of addressing. But if Jadon Sancho becomes available and you can afford him, and you can somehow convince him to come in, yes. And as good as this front four are right now, as settled as they have been, and we've spoken about it, Martial can be a little bit moody, a little bit inconsistent. Rashford has tried to make the case that he prefers to play through the middle. I disagree. I think he's better out wide. But what if he starts to act up again? And then the bigger picture, when you look at United's bench, it's nowhere near as strong as Liverpool's is right now, as Manchester City's is. And if Chelsea complete all these signings that they've been linked with, it won't be as strong as Chelsea's either. The challenge for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is, as a player, you're happy to be a part of that rotation for Pep Guardiola, for Jurgen Klopp. I'm not sure that you're as accepting for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Don, real quick on Harry Maguire. I mean, the transfer fee alone, 80 million plus pounds, suggests he's an elite central defender. Is he an elite center back?
I don't think he's elite in defending, but I think what he is, he's a ball playing center half and he's very comfortable. I mean, it just goes to show when Victor Lindelof went off the pitch today and Eric Bailly come on and give that ridiculous penalty away, it probably suggests that he might be on his way out. So I think, like Shaka, I think Maguire has got a future at the football club. Absolutely. He's the club captain. He's one of the record signings there. But is he and the other four, in my opinion, going to take United to a title? The answer is no, because City are probably 2 years ahead in their development, if not more. And I think Liverpool are exactly the same. But I think he's one that you wouldn't just call on today's performance and say that he got nutmeg, he's a bad player. I think he's got attributes. And if you get a real defender alongside him, then that wouldn't be a bad partnership.
Shaka, what was worse, the nutmeg or De Gea getting beat at the near post? The cardinal sin of goalkeeping, no?
In theory, yes. That's the throwaway cliche, don't get beaten at your near post. But when you're that close in and you get beaten high up to your shoulder with the pace of the ball, that goes out the window. Stop picking on... Listen, I can pick on De Gea with the best of them. You just stop right now, Sam.
even in my commentary today, Shaka, even though the goal went in at the near post, I don't know what you're supposed to do as a goalkeeper when Stanislas was, what, a half a yard, a couple of feet, yeah, and he blasts it hard and low. I know people might say, well, he should have saved it, he's near post. And I've heard it from ex-professionals today. But I tell you what, as a goalkeeper, what on earth can you do? Because Harry Maguire should never, ever, ever be nutmegged and should never, ever be beaten in that scenario again.
Don, real quick, before we let you go, how did you sneak into Stevie Nichols' basement? What are you doing in front of his shrine to his favourite player?
It's Sergio Ramos behind me, Z. Oh, dear.
All right, thanks, Don. We'll leave you and Sergio alone for a minute. Thanks to Shaka as well. United into fifth then after the victory. Here's a look at the table. Leicester City in third. They beat Crystal Palace. Chelsea fourth. They beat Watford. Arsenal with a 2-0 win over Wolves leaves the Gunners in seventh. For more, we welcome in Craig Burley, Stevie Nichol. Craig, it was 14 days ago, seems like a lot less, that Arsenal looked pathetic against Brighton. They've won four games in a row since. How do we explain it?
Well, they weren't very good against Man City, a game before Brighton, but that's kind of, you know, we can sort of put that one to the side a little bit because of the standard of Man City. But then you go to the Brighton game, which they'll be kicking themselves about now when they've now hauled themselves back into a much better position. Look, a bit of organisation, some personnel changes, a good mix of the squad, some good substitutions that he made, a bit more solid defensively, making some better decisions, albeit in the short term with David Luiz. Actually, the goalkeeper that's come in's actually done particularly well, I think. In my opinion, he looks relatively assured. And they've got some youngsters that are in the goal. So, you know, look, Wolves look a little bit jaded, but in saying that, if you're going to play against this Wolves side and you get a win, and you go to Sheffield United, and you get a win away from home in the FA Cup, then you've got to be pretty pleased with what you're doing.
Stevie, as Craig says, you want to point to signs of improvement. Arsenal winning away is not something we've seen in the past. They're starting to do it now.
Yeah, they are. And the most surprising thing is they got a lead and they actually looked comfortable. Traore had a chance to make it 1-1, but other than that, there wasn't a great deal happening for Wolves going forward. So all the things we've said about Arsenal being soft, having a soft underbelly, not being able to defend, you know, when they do it, you have to give them credit for it. So absolutely, there are signs. They're on a run. You can't deny it. But I've got to tell you, I was really, really disappointed with Wolves.
Craig, what was wrong with Wolves today? They've been kind of the Cinderella story. They're at home against Arsenal, shot at the top four. Massive letdown.
Well, look, at the end of the day, the pressure's now on because people have been talking about them as a top four side. Okay, maybe some have been mentioning it for the season, but now we're in this sort of last stretch, then they're very much in the race, and that adds another pressure. And also, when you're playing later in the day, that adds another pressure. They've already seen some other teams, Leicester winning, Man United winning, obviously Chelsea were playing after them, but they're seeing these teams winning as well, and so that makes it doubly difficult. And on top of that, I do think they have, and I would need to check, but I think they've played 52 games this year, which I think is slightly more than some of the others. Now, I'm not making excuses, but I thought they did look, as Stevie said, a shadow of what they have been recently. They had that chance from Traore really early on after about 10 seconds, and then he had the other chance where he clipped it over the goalkeeper. That apart, Arsenal really didn't have much to deal with apart from a few crosses into the box.
Right then, guys, let's turn our attention to Chelsea. They beat Watford 3-0. This just a few days after a real letdown midweek against West Ham. Stevie, when you talk about a young manager, Frank Lampard, you're always looking for a response from his team. How'd you rate the reaction?
Well, it was definitely a response, and there should have been, regardless of the opposition. the way they played the last time out. At the same time, I bet you Frank wishes he could play Watford between now and the end of the season every weekend. I mean, they were... For a team that's supposed to be fighting relegation, you know, when you're fighting relegation, the word fight should come into it, and they never put up one. And Chelsea just took advantage. And you can't blame Chelsea. You know, they passed the ball around, Pulisic was going at them, he looked lively, they got the goals. So, all in all, it was a fantastic response considering what happened against West Ham United. But as I said, I'm sure Frank wishes between now and the end of the season he could play Watford a few more times.
Craig, Stevie mentioned Christian Pulisic. He's making it harder and harder to keep out of that starting lineup, isn't he?
No, I don't think there's any issue about him being in the starting lineup. If he keeps playing the way he is, he looks really sharp. I mean, he's changed of pace, he's changed of direction, his pace of pass, his link up with Giroud. He won the penalty, albeit it was an absolutely calamitous challenge from Capoue. It would have Nigel Pearson frothing at the mouth. With decisions like that, you're going to get relegated. But look, he's not got an issue at the moment, Pulisic. There's not a doubt about that. He is one of the key front men. You've got Barkley playing well, you've got Willian still playing well, who's looking for a 3-year deal. They're only offering him a 2-year deal. Let's see who's going to buckle there. You've got arguably the best defender in Rudiger, who didn't play well against West Ham, I know, but he's their most experienced. He got a rest. Zouma comes back in. He's got a bigger physical presence. Again, you've got a right-back playing at left-back. That's going to be an issue going into the transfer, to the summer transfer season. But all in all, if we're going to brush, and I earlier on I was brushing Man United's win against Bournemouth off, like brushing a leaf off your arm, because Bournemouth are hapless. To Stevie's point, you know, you can't really look too much into it. You get the 3 points, you put away that poor performance against West Ham, but then you look at it and say, this was against Watford, and I'm sorry, they were just not the best.
Finally, gentlemen, Leicester City 3-0 over Crystal Palace, their first victory since the restart. Stevie, boy, Leicester City needed this. They needed it badly.
Well, the most important thing was they got the 3 points, which they did, and then after that, I think it was huge that Vardy got on the score sheet. So they ticked both boxes. They've got a real tough run in. You know, they've got a far tougher run in than Chelsea and Manchester United, who I think are probably going to be the closest rivals in for the top four race. So, for today anyway, Vardy scoring and 3 points. That really was all that mattered for Leicester.
Craig, Vardy gets a brace. Do you think their problems are fixed here?
No, I think they're under pressure because of the fixture list. And, you know, Stevie touched on it. Man United is probably the easiest of the lot. We just come off the back of talking about Arsenal, who may think they're back in the race, but they've got Liverpool, Man City, Tottenham and some others that are going to be tough. Look, Jamie Vardy was 24, I think, when he came into the Football League. I saw him play for Fleetwood Town in the FA Cup in my broadcasting days in the UK. And to achieve what he's achieved in less than 10 years, and to play in the national team and score the amount of goals in the time he has, it's quite incredible. It's a testament to the young man's ability and the fact that he never gave up. And that's what Leicester are going to have to do. They're going to have to dig it out between now and the end of the season because they haven't had a good restart. But Crystal Palace were not at their best. They took advantage of it. And all they need to do now, Leicester, is somehow finish in that top four. They've been in it all year. They were neck and neck with Liverpool and City for a while. Now they're looking over their shoulder. And they've just got to get it done somehow. And it is going to be close for them, I think, when you look at the fixtures and you look at the way they've been playing.
OK, Stevie, time for your favourite question, one we frequently ask here on ESPN FC. 3-6 in the Premier League. How's it going to finish? Right now it's Leicester, Chelsea, United and Wolves. Today, in this moment, how's it going to end?
Well, we're going to be asking this because we've already been asked this question every time there's a game played. So I did say last week I thought Leicester would be okay. I'm going to change that and I'm going to say that Chelsea and Manchester United get in the top four. I think Leicester's fixture list, as much as anyone else, is going to make it tough for them. I also thought Wolves would give Leicester a battle for that fifth place, which might be Champions League spots, considering what's going on with City. But after today, I was disappointed in Wolves, so I'm going to go Man United, Chelsea and Leicester in fifth.
Craig, very much a fluid situation here, 3-6 today. Who you got?
Yeah, at the moment it's looking like Chelsea in third, and United, Manchester United, that is, in fourth. Primarily because they've picked up after the break as they left off. And you look at, as Stevie said, their fixtures, and they've got nobody, I think, in the top half of the table to play. So pretty much, you know, I think if they finish 100%, which they could do, they're going to make that top four. If they don't, obviously they're going to be hedging their bets and biting their nails on the Court of Arbitration for Sport and the decision that's coming up on Man City, because it could go to the fifth. But at the moment, it looks like Wolves and Leicester might just not have enough to get into that top four. And United, with the additions, the youngsters coming through, Pogba coming back, and the fixtures, could just get the job done.
All right, thank you very much, gentlemen.
By the way, wouldn't it be fantastic if it came down to the Leicester-Man United game? That would be brilliant.
Ah, what a story it would be. Plenty more from Craig.
Thanks for that little bit at the end there, Stevie.
I always like to stick a wee bit on the end.
Speaking of sticking it on the end, extra time coming up with these two gentlemen who take your questions off of Twitter and have some fun.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Here's a look at the Serie A table after Saturday's action. Juventus 7 points clear of second place Lazio, who fell to AC Milan on Saturday. Meanwhile, Juve 4-1 winners over Torino. Gab Marcotti joins us for more. Gab, an impressive scoreline for Juventus. What'd you make of the performance?
I thought the performance was good in keeping with their recent performances. You know, we saw it against Lecce, we saw it against Bologna. You know, Juventus, I think, showing a lot of personality. And then the quality up front really making the difference. Torino are not a good side. They weren't going through a good moment. But, you know, it is still a derby. And there was that moment, you know, when they got back to 2-1 and they kept playing, when Juventus needed to kick it up another notch. And that's exactly what they did, and that's what title winning teams look like beyond the quality of the goals, which again was pretty special.
Gab, not only does Cristiano Ronaldo score, he scores from a free kick, the first in over 40 tries with Juventus. Is he back? Because a couple weeks ago, it seemed like people were ready to say post-break Ronaldo wasn't going to be able to get it back in time.
Well, look, I think there's no question that the break affected him, and he had turned in some pretty poor performances after the break. You know, he spoke after the game about the free kick giving him confidence. I think he was talking about more confidence going forward on free kicks, because he, as you said, he'd been on a horrendous run going back to his last 2 years in Madrid. That said, I don't think the confidence was ever missing from his overall game. He was simply going through a rough patch, I think in part because of the layoff, in part because he's at his best when he has a real center forward next to him. Or somebody like Paulo Dybala, who's obviously been exceptional the last few days. I mean, remember, his poor spell when he first came back coincided with him playing that weird formation where Sarri insisted on having him play through the middle. And clearly that's not a solution for Cristiano Ronaldo.
Is that what we found now? I mean, Dybala has been great since the restart. Is this the new role for him with Juventus?
I think, look, the main thing with Juve's front three is it's going to be about Ronaldo. You put Ronaldo back in Ronaldo's place, and then you figure out the other two guys. Now Gonzalo Higuain, who came on and I thought looked pretty sharp, now he's fit again. So now you've got alternatives. You can either go with Dybala through the middle, who's certainly done a job, although, you know, obviously he will interpret that position differently. Or you go with Higuain, who's now fit, and more of a obviously a traditional center forward. And then, you know, for your third slot, you can either put Dybala there if you want to go with Higuain through the middle. You've got Bernardeschi, who I think's been playing well. And you still have the option of Douglas Costa as well, who, of course, scored a great goal the other night. And, you know, and also can come on and do damage, as we've seen. So he's got his big guns there. I think, though, with the really difficult run of games coming up, remember, it's not just Milan. They've also got Atalanta, and they've got the big head-to-head against Lazio. All these things coming together, I think he's going to need all his weapons, and he's going to need the midfield to click. And while there was certainly progress, we got to see how that shakes out against, you know, a better teams than the ones that they've faced in the last couple games.
Gab, you mentioned them. What's going on with Lazio? This team was 1 point behind Juventus at the restart. They've lost twice already since then, including today's disastrous performance against AC Milan.
Yeah, and of course, in the last two games that they won, they had to come from behind. I mean, look, the easy and quick answer is Lazio have two viable center forwards, Felipe Caicedo and Ciro Immobile. Both those guys are out. You're going to need to kind of reinvent yourself. And, you know, this is a team that, you know, they can beat you in different ways, but if they don't have the center forwards, it's really only going to happen for them on the counter. And with Milan scoring first, I think that option went out the window. But, you know, Milan, I think, played really well. I think Milan have certainly turned it on at times since coming back. I think Romagnoli is being a real leader. They're showing a lot of defensive solidity. And, you know, they simply bottled up Lazio once they took the lead. And Lazio really had no answers. Interesting to see now how they respond going forward.
No shot probably at Champions League for AC Milan, but certainly at the Europa League. You think they could catch Roma?
Roma are such a mess right now that, you know, it could be of Roma's own making if they keep dropping. I mean, certainly Milan need to go on a run. Having a fit Ibrahimovic no doubt helps. Having Rebic scoring those goals, I think it's won a game or something silly like that in 2020. That'll help too. I think we'll have a lot of answers after the Juve game because, you know, this is kind of another test for them. Obviously, they played them in the Coppa Italia, but, you know, you can kind of chuck that game out the window because of the early red card for Rebic. But, yeah, I think Milan are capable of getting a result in this game. It'll give us a real test, I think, of their mettle and what kind of run they can go on.
Thanks, Gab. We've got a Sunday full of Serie A action for you on ESPN+. Starts at 11:15 Eastern time. Inter kicking things off. Parma-Fiorentina, your TV match. That game on ESPN2. And late afternoon, we got Napoli and Roma. Don't miss a minute of the action.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The MLS is back. Tournament set to start July 8th. Doubleheader on ESPN. Starts with Orlando City and Inter Miami. Then expansion side Nashville faces Chicago. Stefano Fusaro joins us now on ESPN FC. He's down there in Orlando. The two games we just mentioned are still on the schedule. One game, though, Stefano, we know isn't. Vancouver FC Dallas, slated to be played next Thursday, has been postponed. What more can you tell us about why?
Yeah, well, Vancouver was supposed to arrive July 1st. They didn't because they had two inconclusive tests during their pre-tournament testing, and they decided to do another round of tests. Now, all of those tests came back negative. They will be traveling to Orlando this coming Monday, but they did postpone that first game that was scheduled for July 9th. That game is yet to be determined what date that will be played, but it will be during the group stage. And now that will be getting ready. It gives them a little extra time for training. Both of those squads, FC Dallas has been dealing with their own issues with a positive test, 9 players and 1 coach. And now they get ready for their, both of their first games will be now on July 15th.
You mentioned FC Dallas. We're also starting to hear reports of other teams within the bubble having positive COVID-19 tests. We're also hearing from people outside the bubble. Toronto FC manager Greg Vanney saying he preferred to keep his team in Toronto in a more controlled environment. What's the mood of the players and the staff that are in the so-called bubble that you're talking to?
Yeah, it was definitely, there was definitely some concern early on during the first few days that we were here, just because of the positive tests and the confirmations that did come to light. But I think over the last few days, players are feeling a little more comfortable. They understand that they need to follow the protocols. They're paying attention. And yet the team leaders really kind of rallying the troops, saying, hey, we need to do the right things. We need to follow the protocols to stay safe, because they understand that if they don't, they can't play. They can't do what they love. These are players that they want to get back on the pitch.
All right, so I've been to LAFC's training facility. I've been to Atlanta's training facility. These teams have great training facilities. I'm sure it's very different down there in Orlando. First of all, how are teams sharing the facilities? And then what are the facilities like?
Well, I mean, we're talking about almost 30 fields that they have to choose from. So there is plenty of space. While we were at Inter Miami's training this morning, as we were walking out, there were several other teams that were also taking part in trainings on separate fields. But yeah, because they need so many, Inter Miami was training today on the outfield of a baseball diamond. And even though they were on a baseball diamond, it was still perfectly fine for them to train in the outfield. The grass is pristine, and they're playing just on the same type of grass that they will be playing on during their games in this complex. It's not exactly what you would imagine a professional soccer team would be playing on, but this is where we are, and it's more than enough for them to be ready for this MLS's back tournament.
What are the sessions like, you know, because we've seen some of these teams training in their home markets where they were limited to just individual training off to the side, small groups. Are teams now all in the same field doing things as you would expect in kind of a normal circumstance?
Absolutely. They really are. They're back to doing their normal routines, the normal type of workouts and normal training. It was full of energy at Inter Miami's training this morning. Some of their coaches really, really trying to rile their guys up and get them excited and get them into that game mode. And I think that the players are really reacting because they want to get back on the field, and you see that energy as soon as they stepped on the training ground.
All right, what are the July 4th plans there in the bubble for you and the rest of the crew?
Yeah, not a whole lot. Probably watch a little more soccer and take a nap. I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to be great 4th of July for me.
All right, man, get caught up on the rest. Stay safe down there, and we'll hear from you soon here on ESPN FC. Stefano and Jeff Carlisle teaming up for an article on the website. Make sure to read it. All the latest on life inside the MLS is back tournament.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
All right, then, that's all the time we've got for this edition of ESPN FC. Thanks to everyone involved, Chaka Hislop, Don Hutchison, Stuart Robson, Stefano Fusaro. Right now, it's time for Extra Time, featuring Stevie Nichol and Craig Burley. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into this edition of ESPN FC's Extra Time. Stevie Nichol and Craig Burley along with us, plus your questions. Stevie, the first one aimed at you. We talked about this on the show. Would you like to see Thiago at Liverpool?
Well, yes, I'd like to see him at Liverpool because that would mean that he would just be strengthening the squad and strengthening the competition for places. If they do sign him, I don't think he walks in the team. I don't think he's in the starting 11. But yes, absolutely. The more quality you have and the more competition you have for places, at the very least, keeps everybody on their toes.
Craig, know you love a question about exciting young players. Ansu Fati, Mason Greenwood, Saka, who has the potential to reach the highest ceiling?
Difficult one, really. Young Saka, I think it's looked all right. Got a good goal today. I don't like these who's going to be the best of the youngsters, because these are all, you know, if you're getting game time for Barcelona, if you're doing what Greenwood is able to do for Man United as a youngster, even Saka coming into an Arsenal side that is not up to scratch, it's difficult to judge. I mean, Stevie and I have both seen hundreds and hundreds of youngsters talent that just develop and then fall away and then others kick on. It's really difficult to say. I would say, off the top of my head, I would probably say Greenwood, because I think he's two-footed, got a bit of everything, goal scorers, quick. But it's fairly tight.
Stevie, what do you think between those three?
Well, I think it would be between Ansu Fati and Greenwood, but at the end of the day, I could be wrong, it could end up being Saka, because, you know, players mature at different rates, and because you are a world beater and do something fantastic as a 17-year-old or an 18-year-old, you know, there's a lot of things that can go wrong, particularly off the field, and certainly what goes on between your ears with your mentality. So it's not always down to just ability, because obviously all three of them have got incredible raw ability. Are they going to get the right game time? Are they going to play in the right position that they progress? You know, Greenwood's got supposedly Sancho coming in. Does that mean that his game time disappears? If that happens, then maybe he loses his head and his mentality changes. So, as Craig said, it's really difficult to say who's going to be fantastic. No question, they're all talented. But as to the futures, I'll tell you what, that's an impossible question to answer.
That's his next question, a fun one. Best trash talker you played with or against? How would you usually respond to banter or trash talk on and off the field? Craig?
How would I respond to trash talk, as in, like, just...
Yeah, do you have any sharp comebacks?
Yeah, studs. My studs would be sharpened up half the time. The old metal studs in the old days, Bosch, when there was not as many cameras in the game, take a bit of that. Look, ended it. The world, when we played, it was, I don't know what it's like now, but it was full of people gobbing off. You know, it was just part of the game back then. So, you know, people like Carlton Palmer and others, you know, would just, some players would just be non-stop. Vinny Jones, you know, that's part of the gig. You know, you've not got 22 Saints on the field, by the way, who are just, you know, not trying to do it. And it's people trying to win games here.
Stevie, you got any examples? Not somebody who just talked, but somebody who could really get under your skin.
No, so you don't listen to any idiot who's too busy trying to wind you up and talk to you, then you're obviously putting them off, so you just ignore it. I will say, though, one of the greatest exhibitions I saw of trash talking was an actual combo. It was Ronnie Whelan and Steve McMahon. We were playing against Tottenham at White Hart Lane, and by the end of the game, the two of them had Paul Gascoigne crying on the field. He was actually crying on the field. I saw it with my own eyes. they just kept chipping away at him, and he was getting frustrated because obviously we were dominating the game, he wasn't getting the ball, and he was trying to come back at the two of them, and the two of them against him with a trash talk. He was in tears, honestly. He was a bubbling mess by the end of the game.
That's how I feel on this show after you guys bully me. Both of you.
Well, to be fair, Stevie and I are normally like that on a Thursday night when we see the schedule coming out and you're on it.
Fair point.
Oh, and by the way, I got my digital cancelled last week because you had to catch your flight to fly to ESPN to do some show. Is that correct?
That's correct, and here I am.
To warn you and the schedulers, I don't schedule my life around Sebastian Salazar.
Oh, wait a second. Let's pull the curtain all the way back here. We do this show. We schedule this show around the tee times of our analysts. So let's not get carried away, gentlemen, with whose schedule really runs the coop here.
Well, Stevie and I have never done a show at 8 o'clock in the morning, so that's not true.
Correct.
All right.
That's why we get up in the middle of the night to make sure that we're at a golf course as soon as the light comes up, so that we can get back to do this show. So I think we deserve a bit of credit for the commitment, if you don't mind.
Commitment what, to the show or to the golf course?
To the show. I'll tell you what, it catches up on you getting up at 5 o'clock every morning to get there for 7 for the first leg, to get out, to get back, to do the show. Some of us are committed, unlike others.
Okay, just about enough of that. Next question, did you have any endorsement deals during your careers? If so, what was the strangest product that you endorsed, Craig?
Endorsement deals? I had a deal, boot deal with Mizuno, and I got a set of... I also had a boot deal with Reebok at one time, but these were pretty minute deals back in the day, to be quite frank. But for playing in the FA Cup final in 94, Mizuno gave me a set of golf clubs, of which they were the wrong ones and I could not use them. Well, they weren't wrong. They were blades. They were for, at the time, they were for particularly good players. So, and I wasn't. So, they were absolutely not good to me, but yeah, that's. I got a nice set of golf clubs actually back in the day.
Stevie, any weird endorsement deals?
No, I had a couple of boot deals as well, same as Craig. But I got an endorsement deal from a shin guard company. I can't even remember the name, but I just remember. I remember in the FA Cup final after we won it in '92, making sure that I got them in my hand while I was holding the cup and stuff like that to make sure. So I was hoping to get a bonus. It never came, but there you go.
Greg, you imagine you hire Stevie as your company spokesman and he can't remember the name?
Yeah. Well, you got to do your due diligence, haven't you?
I'll tell you what I'll do, sure. Chef. Name me one shin guard company.
No, I couldn't. I mean, other than the ones that make shoes.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, no. No, if you're just making shin guards, right, I think you're limiting your income.
Well, you're just trying to be clever and you don't know the answer. Hey.
Okay, Stevie.
You should know the answer.
Relax, we'll get you back.
The question you're asking me.
We'll get you back on the golf course as quickly as possible. You don't need to get cranky at me. All right, final question here. Keeping with the theme of accent impressions on the show recently, Frank did a Scottish accent, Craig did a French one. Craig and Stevie, in honor of the 4th of July, can you do an American accent? Stevie, I mean this...
Ha! Howdy!
A-E-I-O-U! How about that one then? Big guy.
Stevie, why is your American accent so angry? Or like, it's like Macho Man Savage.
I'll tell you why it's so angry.
Snap into a Slim Jam.
I will tell you why it's so angry, because any time I'm on the telephone or I'm talking into Alexa or try to get stuff on the TV, if I talk with my normal voice, I can't get anywhere. I mean, I try and put the football on, right? And I've got to go, Sagger. Otherwise, I can't get it. Yeah. So my life revolves around speaking in an American accent to machines. There you go.
Craig. Do you know that thing at work we've got where you talk in at HQ in Bristol? You know, when you talk into, if you want to get somebody else in another part of the building, another part of the campus, you press zero on the telephone and ask you for the name of the person. Well, I keep doing that, and it just comes back all wrong. It's like, who are you looking for? What person are you looking for? Rodriguez. We don't have a Mr. Dominguez here. Rodriguez! Stop it! Discrimination Someday. Against Scottish people, Sebastian. That's what it is.
Absolutely. Yeah. That'll be my next cause du jour.
I could complain about that. You know that?
You could complain. And it would be unlike you to complain. You complained about golf clubs that were too nice. You complained about the first question and extra time that you were given. So if you want to start complaining,
I'll tell you the worst one. The worst one's the voice activated lift. Elevator. That's an absolute nightmare. Up and down all over the place. I never understand what floor you want.
All right then, gentlemen, we'll leave it there for this
11.
Edition. 11. A one. A one,
11.
All right, Stevie, Craig, thank you. We'll see you guys on tomorrow's edition of ESPN FC. Dan Thomas is back. The boys will get their golf in early in the morning. Plenty more to discuss from around European football. Don't miss
5
it.
5 o'clock.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.